This interview is taking place on July the 21st, 2016. The interviewer is Vivian Doyle, and the interviewee is Catherine Sheldon. The interview is taking place at Catherine's home. Well, Catherine, when did you first go to Croydon High School?
I first went in 1953, and I left in 1963, so that would be 10 years.
So you didn't just go to the senior school, did
no,
you?
No, I started at the age of 9 in the homestead. So that was when I began.
Do you know why your parents chose to send you to Croydon High School?
Yes, it was my mother, really, who particularly wanted us to go. She wanted us to go to an academic school. And she had heard that Croydon High School was an excellent school, and that was why she sent us there.
Can you remember your first impressions of school?
Well, if we started by talking about the homestead, it was a very pleasant old house where I suppose it was a kind of a drawing room or a ballroom was the assembly hall where we also had lunch. And there was a gym and very lovely grounds, and in particular outside the front door, I suppose, there were these two wonderful stone eagles, and we were allowed to play behind these eagles in break times. And one of them had lost part of a wing because of the bombing in the war. So it was, I mean, and I believe that they took these eagles with them when they went to the Selsdon site later on. So that the eagles were what everybody remembers, I think, about the homestead. But there were sort of tennis courts and then some little bit of woodland around, and that was good fun as well, because you could play there. You could play all kinds of adventure games and things in these bits of woodland in the break times. But when I got there, they were just about to have the school's 80th birthday, and that was a huge event. The Duchess of Gloucester arrived because she was our patron, and my class were doing gym that day. All the classes had to be staged, you know, doing something. And we were dimly aware, all the apparatus was out, and we were kind of running and jumping and climbing and this sort of thing. And we were dimly aware of this sort of person with a hat in the corridor, and busily went on running and jumping. And then I looked up and she'd gone, you know, and that was, so I didn't really see the Duchess of Gloucester very much at all. But there was also some kind of a big entertainment that year, because Miss Mounsey, who was a grand lady who ran the homestead, very respectable and of the old school, you know, she was determined that every child in the homestead was going to be involved in this entertainment. So, of course, that it wasn't easy. There were 60 girls in a year, three classes of 20, and so it was 120 children had to be accommodated in this entertainment. So they decided to have a circus. And my class were the seals, and Miss Daniel, who was my form teacher, was the ringmaster, and she had a top hat and you know, was all dressed up in this way. We were all seals on little stools and things around, playing our performing tricks and catching a ball, trying to catch a ball on our noses and one thing and another. Anyway, we had to be dressed in black, of course, to be seals. Well, it wasn't that long after the war, and there wasn't really, you know, people just didn't have lots of materials and things like that. But everybody had old blackout, because you didn't have to have blackout anymore. So we were all dressed in blackout, or, you know, sewn together to make our seals. Of course, once we'd got the costume on, we couldn't walk anymore, because we got tails, so we had to kind of flop around to become our seals. So it was, I remember that.
The blackout was for curtains.
Yes, in the wartime, everybody had to have blackout. Mm-hmm. And, of course, once the war was over, it wasn't needed anymore, and everybody took it down. Yeah. So there it was, old blackout. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm. What about the lessons? Can you remember how they were arranged in the homestead?
Well, we had quite a lot of lessons with our form teacher. But There were obviously some specialist lessons as well, I think music and gym and things like that. Even a couple of teachers came down from the main school, I think, to teach us then. Miss Mansey took assembly every day, and she took us for English in the fourth year juniors. And she was, I can remember spelling tests and things where she asked us how to spell anemone, and she very wrongly pronounced it anemone, I remembered, and that was because she was trying to mislead us, you see, because really it's spelled anemone. So, things like that, little things. But actually, what I remember most was the ancient history. I absolutely loved the ancient history we did as in the junior school. And we were taken to the British Museum, and we saw Leonard Woolley's finds and the ram, what he called the ram caught in the thicket by its horns. We learned about Sumerian death customs, all kinds of things. I absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. You know, I really did. So, yes, that was very exciting. Yes, so I did very much enjoy the lessons in the homestead. I very much did. Mm-hmm. Many, many happy memories of learning interesting things. And, it wasn't a repressive regime. We were encouraged to contribute it wasn't in any way, I think, an old-fashioned education. I don't think any of it was. I had a lot of thought about that. But, yes, a lot of enjoyment there. Oh, of course, I ought to mention, in the sort of in the depths of the cellars of the homestead, there was the pottery. And we were lucky because our class did pottery all three terms of the third year. And I've still got some pots now that I made then. I'm decorated with slip and all kinds. They had to go away to be fired. And then they came back, and if they hadn't exploded, it was really fun. We started with coil pots, and then we proceeded to most beautiful things, wonderfully decorated. So yes, that was tremendous fun. It was wonderful. Yes. And we also had a rest after lunch in the homestead. And so we all had to take a woolen blanket in. And your class would go down to the depths of the cellars of the cloakrooms, and your form teacher would hand out your form's blankets would be rolled up in a particular place, and she'd hand them all out, and everybody put out their hand, so which was their blanket, and then you went up into the gym, and you lay down for half an hour. You were allowed to read, but it was required. People thought you needed a rest and a quietness.
How long was the day, actually?
Well, it finished at 10 to 4, and it started, well, we used to get to school about 8:30, but the day started at 8:45 or something like that.
Pretty much the same all through the school, then.
It was, but in the homestead we had Wednesday and Friday afternoons off, and if you were in the Elms, which of course my sister was, they had more, I think in kindergarten, if you were in that there, you had all the afternoons off. It was very, very part-time, and then gradually extending to afternoon school as you went up through the school.
How did you get to school?
Used to go by bus, and the buses went past our house. There were the 403, 408 and 470. And we'd get on the bus, and it would stop just right in Wellesley Road, just where the school was. So it's very convenient. And,
Where were you living?
We were living in Sanderstead at the time, which is a sort of suburb, village.
So how long was the journey, would you say?
The bus itself was 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that was quite convenient, really. It was, in fact, the nearest grammar school to our home, and I knew that because when I got a free place when I was 11 for the senior school, they also paid my bus fares, and they would only pay the bus fare. It was the nearest grammar school to where you were living. So Purley County or Selsdon, which were the two that I could have gone to otherwise, they must have been no further, but no nearer.
And your parents were quite happy for you to go on your own on the bus, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. But I think, you see, that really people were much more unworried about dangers of, stranger danger and all of this kind of thing in those days. I mean, we just assumed that we could do all these things. We were competent enough, and there were plenty of other people going. And, while my father did run a car, which he did at odd times during my youth, he used to take us in the morning. Of course, we always used to come home by ourselves, whatever. So about 4 miles odd, something like that.
Do you remember friends you made in the homestead and whether you went on into the senior school?
Yes, nearly everybody from the homestead went on into the senior school. What happened was that the forms were all jumbled up once you got into the senior school, and the 45 or so people coming in, could it be as many as that? It was about that. The classes went up to 33 in the first form senior school. That was quite, they were quite big classes, really, in the first 3 years. Then they went down again in the fourth form, the fourth year secondary, because they were divided into four classes then. Mm. So that made a difference. But, yes, so you would find yourself in the first year senior with some of the people that you were in with from the homestead, and a whole lot of new people as well. And I don't remember making a huge distinction in my mind between old and new. You know, they were just all there. that was how it was.
You were more familiar than those of us who came from elsewhere, weren't you? Once you went up into the senior school, it wasn't such a big leap for you.
Yes, in a way, I'm sure that was true. Although all the staff were new to us, not Miss Adams, of course. Well, yes, because we didn't know any of them, mm-hmm. and the buildings were new. We hadn't been into the senior school at all, that I remember, anyway. Mm-hmm. And it was over the road. It was, in a new place. Mm-hmm. So all of it was new, but yes, it had a certain continuity. What happened with assembly was that Miss Mounce used to take assembly on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays, but Miss Adams used to come down and take assembly, that's the head of the whole school, on a Wednesday. And she also took assembly in the Elms. So she took assembly at the normal time in the homestead, and then she walked across to the Elms and they had a late assembly on a Wednesday morning in the Elms. And so we were familiar with the headmistress, but not probably with anybody else from the senior school pretty well. So, yes.
So you were a fee-paying...
For the first 2 years.
The first 2 years.
Yes,
and then
yes.
You took the 11 plus.
The 11 plus. And I was very lucky, actually, because the Surrey 11 plus gave six places to Croydon High School, and I was lucky enough to gain one of the six. So it was very fortunate. The Croydon, I think there were 40 Croydon places. So, of course, you see, you've got 46 people on free places and about the same number fee payers. I suppose it was half and half. And, of course, that was the ideal, I suppose, of a direct grant school, mm. That you tried to give the same experience to people from whatever background. When I think about the senior school of Croydon High School, the first thing that I see in my head is the long main corridor stretching out ahead of me. And I think the reason it's such a vivid impression is that it had this lovely red floor covering, and it was very, very striking. And I picture myself at the far end, and on my left is the amazing master clock. Now, we had this clock explained to us when we first went into the senior school by Miss Cotton, who was our form teacher. I'll come back to her later. But it was a master clock. It had been given by past staff of the school. And in every room in the main building, there was a slave clock. And the slave clock was pulled along and ticked every minute as the master clock went. And then the master clock also rang the bells so that you could tell. And, of course, the very interesting thing to me when I look back on it is that the slave clocks were all where the pupils could see them and not where the teacher could see them. So the teacher couldn't see that it was 1 minute to go till the bell went, but the pupils were all raring to go and ready, And that is very, very interesting to me. And it does suggest a certain child-centeredness, in a way. There is a kind of philosophy behind that, I think, in a sense. And so that interests me very much. Anyway, the main corridor, as you went on up the main corridor from the master clock, there was the old library on your right, and classrooms, quite big classrooms, on your left. Classrooms 1, 2 and 3, I think. And then at the far end, there was a window. And somewhere around then the headmistress's study, sort of further on, and the main door to your right, that was the front door that you've got the pictures of, and there. But hovering around that end of the corridor, there were these two amazing old ladies. And I've been trying to think of their province. They weren't cleaners. I think they were in uniform. I think they were sort of personal maids. I think they were survival. I've got a feeling their names were Doris and Lena. And they may even have been refugees or something like that. I don't know. They were obviously being retained until their end, you know, because they certainly wouldn't ever be replaced. But they were sort of personal helpers to the headmistress or something. So that was really strange and interesting to me, that they had a little den, I think, kind of on the left down some steps or something. But anyway, that was those were they. And then the headmistress's study was on your right there and ahead. And you didn't really get into the headmistress's study very much. You went to her study if you had to sign the distinguished workbook. And the distinguished workbook was for everybody that got 6 or more exam marks of 75% or over. And so you could sign it twice a year, with the Christmas exams and the summer exams. And, you know, people used to line up and go along and sign the distinguished workbook. For all I know, it still exists. I have no idea. But the amazing thing was that people's first class results over 75 were read out in assembly. We used to sit in assembly and listen to every child's name and the subjects, you know. And it's fascinating and extraordinary when you look back on it. But I guess it was there as a kind of incentive, you know, to try and get people to value work, which I think a lot of girls' schools did not. A friend of mine who went to boarding school remembers having to make lots of mistakes in exams on purpose because the other girls would have so despised her, and the staff too, you know. So she made mistakes on purpose. Now, that wasn't the case in our school. You know, people wouldn't have dreamt of that. And so I guess they succeeded in that. The only person I really remember, but I that's just in my memory, who signed the distinguished workbook without, you know, just on the sort of ordinary exam results thing, was a girl called Claire Taylor, who did a rather remarkable, I think she wrote a novel in the Wednesday afternoon English lessons in the first year, and I think it was a remarkable piece of creative writing, and she signed the distinguished workbook for that, which was something pretty remarkable when you think about it. That was
I remember Claire. Good. She was given to practical jokes.
She was, and in the third year we had a lovely new history teacher called Miss Vincent, and Claire was kind of copying, I think it was Moffat Molesworth or one of these fictional figures, and she made a beak trap for beaks, and it was very obvious. It was on a radiator, and there it was, you know, labelled a beak trap for beaks with nails sticking up out of it. You know, Miss Vincent was laughing at that one. And it was only because Claire liked Miss Vincent, you know, that she was inventing each lesson something, you know, something different to amuse her with, really. Yes.
Beak was schoolboy slang,
it
wasn't it?
Was. It, well, that was Molesworth, I think it yes, was, wasn't it? Was, it? Yes, that's right, for teacher. Books. Yes, yes.
Yes. That's right.
Yes.
I seem to remember she put a mouse in someone's desk once as well.
Dead or alive? I don't remember that at all.
A
live mouse?
A live mouse, yeah.
Well, I do not remember that, but I wouldn't put it past her. Mm-hmm. No, that's quite possible. Yes, she was a very lively person, was Claire. Yes.
There was another corridor in the school, wasn't there? Rather a dark one. I think, was it room 13 and so on?
Ah, yes. Well, now, that was very interesting. The school hall and the classrooms adjoining it and at the end of it were purpose-built in would that be in the 1930s? They were of a period, anyway. They were good big classrooms, 13, 14, 15, 16, and then 17 and 18 at the far end there. And, of course, the corridor between the hall and those classrooms was only lit, really, by borrowed light. And so it was a darkish and a long corridor, yes, you're right. And the hall itself was where assembly took place, and also school plays, where the two back classrooms were very good for dressing rooms. Yes. Of course, they were most convenient. Mm-hmm. And school lunches, of course. The school assembly, as I say, was taken by Miss Adams 4 days out of five. And she was an amazing figure. She really was. She was very small, and I suppose like Napoleon, really. She had the strength of a small person. She had an elegant Edinburgh accent, which I'm not going to attempt to imitate, though it was imitable by people other than me, you know, very, very much so. And whenever we came back from a holiday, Miss Adams would have gone somewhere amazing for her holidays, and my mother always used to say when we got home from school, "Where's Fanny been this year?" Because, of course, naturally, Margaret F. Adams, she was always going to be called Fanny, wasn't she? So everybody called her Fanny. And she would tell us where she'd been and what she'd done, and, of course, she went on world tours, and she went to all those places, and she met the Queen Mother, and, you know, she would name-drop quite shamelessly all these different things she'd done. But it was fascinating. It was interesting, you see. It was never boring. And she would talk very seriously to us girls about how we should behave. And her word for what I suppose other people might call vulgar was low tone. This is low tone. You must not eat in school uniform. It is low tone. So that was really how she referred to it. It was quite interesting. To go into assembly, we had to line up in height order. And so they didn't have first years at the front and sixth form at the back or anything like that. It was smallest people in the class at the front and then all the way up to the back. I was the third tallest in my class, I remember. Cynthia Gough and Elizabeth Hussey were taller than I. And, you know, you remember these things. It's amazing, isn't it? All these years. You know, it's absolutely amazing. But, yes, the choir, when they formed, I can't remember what year people went into the choir. Not in the first year, I don't think. But anyway, the choir used to sit on the platform from which they had a wonderful view of all the rest of us who were down in the body of the hall. And you weren't allowed to talk, of course, while you were waiting for the headmistress. And one day I was absolutely jammed in between two people, and I whispered to the girl on my left, "Could you shove up a bit?" And Miss Hunt, who was the head of music, happened to be passing at the time, and she said, "Girl, stand up!" And so I had to stand up in the middle of the hall, and I remember the people, my friends who were sitting in the choir said, "It's Catherine! It's Catherine! She's standing up! Look!" And then I had to explain to Miss Bannister afterwards why I'd been so evil, and she forgave me. Miss Bannister was head of RE. So but there you are. That was assembly. And we had notices after the religious part of assembly. We always sang a hymn and had a reading and a prayer. And after the notices, every single person that had a note, an absence note or any other kind, had to line up and take it to Miss Adams, who thereby really was keeping a very close eye on every child in the school when you think about it. And I remember once I'd had a very badly broken leg when I was nine, and it gave me quite a lot of trouble in the senior school. And my mother wrote asking that I be excused games because it was swelling up. I was having to see specialists. It was all kinds of problems. And Miss Adams said to me, you realise, Catherine, that this is equivalent to a doctor's note. And I didn't know what to say, really. And so I said, yes. And after that, I never did games again. That was that. For the rest of my... And this was from the second form, I think, in the whole of my school career. And the head of P, who I can't remember. I remember the one when I was first at the school. That was Miss Wood, and she was lovely. The new one, I've forgotten her name. But she was convinced that I was skiving. And so when we had the school doctor to see us all in the fourth form, because there was a school doctor, and she did see us from time to time, make sure we hadn't got TB or anything... the doctor sort of had a very good look and whether one of my legs was longer than the other and all kinds of things. And she said, I think really it would be unwise for her to do any PE or games. So that was it. I was confirmed and I never did. And after a bit, they got so sick of me sitting there twiddling my thumbs while they were playing or doing whatever they were doing that they sent me off to the library and I just sat quietly in the library, looked at rather askance by the older girls, because, you know, they, what was this, you know, this person doing there? But anyway, that was, yes, notes after assembly. Yes, I think she did. I think she kept tabs on everybody in the school very, very much so. She'd got something over 600 girls. And I remember once when I was walking in, and I must have been going in by the main door that day. I don't know why, really. Miss Adams happened to be coming into school at the time, and she came right up to me and she said, how is your mother? And my mother had indeed been in hospital that time. So she'd remembered that my mother was in hospital, and I thought that was impressive. I really did. You know, she was, yes, a very, very competent lady, as well as a real character. Yes.
Do you remember the changeover to Miss Cameron?
I do indeed, because Miss Adams left when we were in the fifth form. And Miss Cameron arrived. Well, of course, it was really a difficult act to follow. It really was. Mm. And I don't think... I'm not sure. Had she been a headmistress or just a head of house at Rodin or somewhere before? So Miss Adams had been her headmistress before she came to Croydon High School, and so had the previous one, I think. Mm-hmm. Yes. But anyway, she was uncertain of herself at first, and it made it rather difficult. And she didn't have her finger, because we were used to somebody that had her finger on everything. Mm-hmm. So I remember that I'll come to the drama festival later on, but we were doing a Shaw festival that year. And everybody was producing scenes from Shaw, because that's what we've been told to do. And Miss Cameron said, there's rather a lot of Shaw being performed today, isn't there? And, of course, this was regarded as hilarious by, you know, because that was its nature. It was a Shaw festival. But anyway, there you are. Otherwise, I think she was a very kind lady, Miss Cameron. Yes. Mm.
Did you have anything to do with her personally?
Well, nothing particular, you know, nothing more than the normal. it was Miss Adams that I remembered most, really. Yes. I was in trouble once and had to go and see Miss Adams, I remember, because this was an amazing thing. One of the charity, the school did a lot for charity, and one of the things it did was the farthings collection. It was called farthings, even though we didn't have any farthings anymore. We had halfpennies and pennies, of the old halfpennies and pence, of course. But these were the collection. You had a farthings monitor whose business it was to go around and badger everybody to give pennies and halfpennies and things like that. And then at the end of the week, they all went into the farthings fund, and they all went to charity. And I was farthings monitor, and traditionally there was an absolute, you were absolutely forbidden to keep any money in your desks, for obvious reasons at school, because, you know, you kept books in your desks, which was quite a good system, actually. And so I never kept any money in my desk. I had a purse, which was in my pocket, and that was my private money. But farthings, traditionally, always were kept in your desk. That was what they were. Everybody kept them in their desks. But, of course, alas and alack, one morning when I came to look at the farthings, I knew how much money I'd got there, and there was a whole lot missing. Oh, dear. So, of course, I reported it to the form teacher, and it was big trouble and huge amounts of, you know, investigations and one thing and another. They found the culprit, who I shall not name, and it was a very wealthy child. But, of course, that's not the point, is it, you see? I mean, you know, that this is not nothing to do with it. But anyway, I was in trouble because I shouldn't have left money in the desk, and that's why I had to go and see Miss Adams, who was very reproving. And I explained that everybody always kept farthings in the desk, because they did, you know. And after that, the school changed its farthings collection completely. They were only allowed to be on Wednesdays alone, and they had to be handed straight in to whoever it was, the teacher or whatever. So I was very disappointed in a way, because it meant that... of course, you collected a lot less. It was just if people happened to bring in charity money on a Wednesday. Then. But anyway, that was the time I was reproved by Miss Adams. Mm. And you will go home and you will tell your mother that I have found you guilty of two carelessnesses. that you left money in the desk and your purse that was in your pocket did not have your name in it. Yes, so there was my... there, I was in trouble. Yeah. Right, well, I thought I'd like to talk a little bit about the lessons. Because I think from what I said before, with the distinguished workbook and things being read out in assembly and things like that, it almost sounds as if it was a completely exam-based curriculum. And I feel it was not so. It wasn't exam-based as education is today. And indeed, we were not pushed into doing only syllabuses or anything like that. There was a very wide-ranging curriculum of extreme interest. And I was even thinking the other day that I didn't even know what the set texts were for A-level until the mock, because we'd done so many texts over the 2 years. And I'd no idea which ones were going to be set for the A-level exam. So they were concerned, passionately concerned, I think, to give us a good general education. And the best of it was outstandingly good, I thought, and always, to me, very, very interesting. And when we joined the first form, our form teacher was Miss Cotton, who was a splendid lady. I think she was taking a turn as deputy head at the time, because they did take it in turns to be deputy head in those days. And she was my maths teacher for 5 years, as it happened. And she had a way of drawing a geometrical proof on the board, and then she would stand back from the board and sigh and say, "A beautiful proof." And the idea that a proof could be beautiful, that mathematics was elegant, that was something that stuck with me as something quite wonderful. This was very, very nice. She was a remarkable lady, I remember. She was quite portly, was Miss Cotton. And she clearly must have had all her dresses made for her by a dressmaker. And they all had belts, and the belt was always done up on the middle hole. And I used to look at this and think, well, how amazing that it just fits. But of course, that was why, you know, she had them specially made for her. Anyway, that was mathematics. I loved history. I thought history was very well taught, because, again, the teachers were plainly passionate about their subject. We had a lovely lady called Mrs. Dewey for several years, and she was passionate about the implications of political movements, political ideas, and she'd want, you know, we would be very willing to discuss. There was a lot of oral work in all of the art subjects, really. People were encouraged to take part. It wasn't chalk and talk at all. It was a lot of discussion. There were a lot of ideas that were quite modern for the time. For instance, we always pushed the desks back, and they're quite heavy and busy, for Shakespeare lessons. It was felt that you should not just read Shakespeare around the class. You know, this should be something you acted out in a space. And a lot of very, very good things like that. I think I wasn't musical, but I think the music education was very good. It covered a lot of ground. Looking back, there was a lot there, a lot that was very, very interesting. Where I feel the school fell a little short on was certainly the art education. Week after week, we used to go up to the art room for a double period, and there was often a title on the board, and you just painted it. And that was that. And I was just thinking the other day, because in Liverpool University courses this year, there's a class in drawing, and I thought, if only somebody had actually given me a class in drawing, just taught me something about how to do things, I would have loved that. But no, week after week after week, this was, you know, it was before the 60s. You see, it was 55 to 57 or 8 that I did art. So that was a disappointment, really, but very easy for the teacher, who read her book while we all painted. I remember that well. But the other thing where I feel things could have been rather better done was in science. And science was really regarded as a sort of extra. In the first form, we did science on a Friday afternoon, a double period, when most of the rest of the staff had the Friday afternoon off. So, you know, that was how serious science was. And then I remember in the second year, we had a whole term in our double period, one double period a week, doing densities. And one week it would be the density of a rubber bung, and the next week it would be the density of glass stopper, and the next week, and a whole term of this. And once you got the idea that it was weight over volume, that was that. I mean, you know, it really was absolutely, you know, it could have been done in 2 weeks, I felt, and then we could have got on to something else. So I wasn't too keen on science, on the sciences. But when I consider what happened in the fourth form, where you got divided up into the arts form that studied German or Greek, and the science form that did extra maths or extra science, and then Latin general and general, I realised that the science form had as many girls in it as the arts form. So enough people must have been attracted by the science by the end of third year to want to do it. And a lot of girls went to university for the sciences to become doctors or physicists or chemists or anything like that. So I think, you know, in the arts form, you either did physics with chemistry or biology. By that time, you were given four lessons a week for that. But I did physics with chemistry. But I don't think you'd get away with as little science today. You certainly wouldn't, of course.
Was this dependent on who taught you, do you think?
Well, some of it was. Of course, it's very difficult to disentangle your love of a subject from your love of, you know, or interest in the teacher. But I think there was a bit of a lack of imagination, really, in the way they went in for the sciences. I do think so. Because I like science now. I've done a university degree with the Open University in sciences as an adult. I went to a course on quantum mechanics last term. You know, I'm really could have been a passionate scientist, but it didn't hit me at school. I liked the teachers. I liked, yes, Miss Gregory, who did biology, and Miss Baker, who did the physics and chemistry. Nice people. Miss Harrington, who was a little bit old, but
Miss Lines.
I don't know that I ever had her. Barbara did, though. My sister did. She liked her very much. Yes, yes, nice. She did the photography of the school plays as well. Mm.
Yes, there were sort of after-school activities.
Yes, both of them. Yes, I mean, that was another thing that was excellent about the school, a huge variety of extracurricular activities, and people were encouraged to take part. There was, I didn't do games, but there was a lot of games. There was a lot of different kinds of games competitions. There was a debating society, and we were encouraged to go to that from quite young as an audience, and then to speak in it, and standard was quite high. Whenever there was a general election, we had a mock election in the school, and that was very good. There was an SCM. There were sort of religious. They used to get guest speakers in for the Christian movement, the thing. There was a lot. There were two drama societies, junior and senior. There were two school plays every year. Which were of an incredibly high standard, very ambitious. Things like Richard II, which is almost ununderstandable by children today. You know, and they actually produced it, and very, very well. I remember Mary Grimes was Richard, and she's my idea of Richard II now. You know, and it was astoundingly good. The staff themselves did a play every now and again. They did 1066 and all that, and that was much enjoyed. When they did school performances, Miss Adams always used to get up on the stage before the thing started and welcome everybody in. And her last words would be, "Would ladies kindly remove their hats?" Because, of course, all women wore hats then, and people could not see over them. So that was, that was something that had to be said in those days.
Now it's
so different.
Switch off your mobile phone.
That's what it would be. Yes, yeah. You see. Isn't that interesting? Yes, that's right. So that was fascinating. The hall didn't normally have chairs in it, but They had the first, an early variety of stacking chair called Tansad chairs, which had a kind of canvas. And when we were in the third form, it was our duty. We were in charge of chairs. So whenever the hall needed chairing, which was the verb, we used to rush out and get these piles of chairs and line them up in rows. You know, I remember that very well. It was all good fun being in charge of chairs. That was rather nice. So, yes.
Do you remember the Guild of Social Service?
Very much so. As I said before, over the farthings, there was a lot of charity work. Mm. And the Guild Day was a big charity thing each year. And each form, I think, had its own charity that it contributed to. And I remember in the first form, it was some kind of a children's home, I can't remember what. And Miss Cotton said that she would be prepared to buy dolls if we would be prepared to dress them. And so people, one between two, I think, had either a large doll or a small doll and took it home and brought it back with doll's clothes on it. And that was, you know, very, very nice. There used to be a Guild Day where all these gifts, everybody gave two gifts. And there used to be a Guild Day where all these were displayed and they were absolutely magnificent. You know, they really were. People were very happy to give. It was always a little bit harder when you had an old people's home to give to. But in the end, what we decided on in my household was that we would give them bulbs, because, you know, that would be very nice. And so my mother would get some hyacinths and put them in a pot, you know, with the fibre and so forth, and put them in the dark. And then they were just ready to come out at Christmas. And I remember an old lady, when we took these round to her once, and her face lit up when she saw these hyacinths. She was absolutely thrilled. So we decided this was a good present for an elderly person, you know. So, yes, the school was very aware that there was a world outside which we ought to be involved with, and where people were much less well off than us, and we ought to realise that. And I remember one of the teachers, I think it was Miss Ackerley, who taught Latin and Greek. She went off to a refugee camp in Germany for a complete summer holiday, and she came back and gave us talks about it and how they'd been, you know, they'd found the refugees in a state of deep depression, which is not surprising, because, you know, if you're homeless, and they did things like painting huts to brighten things up, you know, just to kind of bring a bit of life and sort of pleasantness in. And you know, this kind of thing, the international world was very well represented, really. I don't think it was a geographical society. I know Miss Tebble, the geographer, was in charge of it, but there used to be all sorts of films about Africa and things like that. There was a lot going on, a lot in the lunch hour, you're quite right, but some things after school. I think the Dramatic Society was after school.
Do you remember going to the cinema from school? I'm sure we went to see Scott of the Antarctic.
You're right. You're right, we did. We also went to a lot of plays. I remember going to A Midsummer Night's Dream when we were in the first year, and they got an amateur music group to play the complete overture by Mendelssohn before it. And we were very polite, you know, but we were kind of shifting our seats because it was a long time before the proper play began. Play we'd been studying, of course. And we did a lot of Shakespeare at school, because we did only one in the first year. But after that, at least two Shakespeare plays every year, right up to the fifth year. And you see, this was another good thing about the school. You didn't do English literature O-level. You did English language, but nobody did English literature O-level, because it was felt that to confine yourself to three or perhaps four books was absolutely ridiculous in the fourth and fifth form. And we did huge amounts of texts in those years, and that was very good. And then if you did A-level English, then that counted as an O-level as well as an A-level, so yeah, that didn't matter. But if not, if you're in the science sixth form or elsewhere in the sixth form, you did O-level English literature then. So everybody came out with an English literature qualification if they passed, but it wasn't sort of foisted on you in the fifth form. It was felt to be too narrow an exam. And equally, you see, we were an experiment in our year, because they moved the November O-levels to January for the first time in our year. And so the teachers were encouraged, if they possibly could, to make us do the January exam. And we did, in English, History, Geography, Latin, French, we did the January exam and got those out of the way. Maths and science felt that we needed to have right until the summer to do that in. So we did those two in the summer. And what that meant, not like today where you'd give a subject up if you'd passed it, it meant that we could have real education from January to July. And I can remember that I undertook a study of John Donne, for instance, in those months. I mean, lovely things you could do because you were free. You were absolutely unhidebound. We read French plays in the French lessons. I mean, it was really sort of... Well, I think we were also given some A-level proses to do then, so that did take us well beyond O-level standard in French, for instance. It was lovely. It was a good... But nobody thought that... Education was for exams. Education was for learning. It wasn't for exams. Exams were just a step on your way, and you tried to do well at them, of course. But it was the education that mattered. We did have time, of course, after A-levels. Now, nowadays, what children do is leave school. They've finished their exams, so what do? They leave school. Nobody thinks education. No way did we leave school. We stayed there, and we did lots of interesting things. And it really was interesting. And... I remember we actually did our own production of 1066 and all that at that time, and this was performed to the whole school at the end of term. So it kept us very busy indeed, you know, with all the other things we were doing. But it was felt that education wasn't just exams, and that was a priceless gift. It was a wonderful thing. I mean, well, it was for me. I was academically inclined, and that was what I liked to do. But to go back to drama and... extracurricular activities. Every year, I think I did mention this before, we did a drama festival, fourth years and upwards, and every class took a scene from a play, and they were all produced on the drama festival day. And traditionally, it was Shakespeare. But by the time we'd got there, it was only Shakespeare every few years. One year, I remember, when I was in the fourth form, it was verse plays. And I volunteered to produce this thing, and to find a suitable extract from a verse play wasn't easy, and I went round the library and all kinds of things, found something from Dorothy L. Sayers in the end, which had a chorus and the various, you know, complicated Adam and Eve, I remember, and you know, the apple, and it was sort of quite dramatic, I think. And we produced this play completely by ourselves. There was no teacher overseeing this at all, and we were 14, 15. We were in the fourth year. And I got people to come to school early to rehearse. So we would, I would get, you know, the sort of quarter to eight, 7:45 bus, and we'd get in there, and we'd get half an hour's rehearsal before school sometimes, and then, you know, because people are very busy lunch hours after school, we had some rehearsals, of course, at different times, and rehearsals of bits of the cast, you know, the chorus, for instance, needed massively rehearsing. But this was done. Young people were expected to be able to be independent and organise themselves. And I have never, and I've done 29 years of full-time teaching, and I never found a group of children that could organise themselves in this way. So I do think that is quite remarkable. Not even upper sixths. I remember one of the when I was in Harrogate, one of the classes, one of the upper sixth lot wanted to... do a play, and they wanted to do Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I said I'd help them, and I did a lot of, you know, quite a lot of stuff, translating the text into actable stuff, but they didn't manage it. They couldn't do it. It fell to pieces. Yes, and these were 18-year-olds just off to university. I thought, yes, you know. So I do think it was remarkable that this was expected of us, and it was done by us, entirely by us.
I don't remember any discipline issues to speak of at all at school. Do you ever remember?
Well, there was the Miss Vincent one. I mean, I think if there were a teacher that came in and was a little uncertain of herself, but of course you'd have to remember that the powers that be would be very strongly determined that education was so important and it had to go on. Yes.
We didn't mess around in the
classroom. No, we did not. No, we really didn't. I suppose, of course, our parents at home were very busily telling us that this was our chance. Yes. And that we had, and we were also told this in assembly, of course, that girls could do anything they chose to do, very much so, you know, and that we were expected to either go on to university or to do something exciting abroad, you know, like voluntary service overseas, a lot of people did that, or, you know, to get ourselves qualified for a career. And this was felt to be the right thing to do. And, of course, we'd got all these people, mainly unmarried staff, as examples. And, of course, a lot of them were unmarried because two world wars had taken their toll on... so there were a lot of unmarried ladies around, and they had found their own way to a fully independent and often quite exciting and interesting life. And all credit to them. Some, you know, you'd have some little... Miss Cotton, I remember somebody told me that she'd had a fiancé who'd been killed in the war. It may have been so, or it may have been the kind of story that attaches to such people, you know. But, yes.
Do you think the school did prepare you well for life as an adult?
I've no idea what life is, so that really puts it rather a problem, you know. It did give you ideals, I think. It did encourage you to think about things, if you were prepared to think about things. It did send people off into all kinds of careers, huge range. I'm sure that it was probably not so good for people that weren't interested in academic things, because it was operating as a grammar school. You know, they're never very good grammar schools for people that really are in the middle of the age group, academically speaking, but they're at the bottom of a grammar school, and it's always depressing to be at the bottom of anything. Mm. Very, very depressing. But what, you know, that was the way schools were organised then. Mm. You know, had advantages and had disadvantages as well, big disadvantages. Mm.
So, from the sixth form onwards, what did you do? You stayed on another year?
In the third year, yes, a term, really, in the third year, which was rather fruitless, really. I didn't get into Oxford or Cambridge, so there we were. So that was it was very much, I mean, you were sort of on a limb, you know, you hadn't got a form, you didn't belong to anything really, you know.
I think you were in a different building, weren't you? Wasn't there a building next door?
There was sixth form house. No, I don't remember being in it particularly. I remember that we were all honorary prefects if we'd stayed on into the 36, and so we got the prefects common room all the time. And I've got a picture of mine. You didn't have to wear school uniform, which I must come back to, of course. I've got a picture of myself sitting in the common room. I've got a picture of myself having the odd lesson, and I've got a picture of an inspector who came in. I remember being inspected from outside twice in my school career, and one was when I started Greek in the fourth form, and this inspector came in and he horrified both Miss Ackerley and us, the four of us who were doing Greek. That was very generously staffed, wasn't it, you see? Because he suddenly said, "Close your books, I am going to question you on what we've just read." And we each had to say a phrase in Greek. And I was horrified. But you see, I can still remember the phrase I said to this inspector. Degar odysun, pantaku planestai, katagain kai katathalason, prun idain, tein filin gunaika, kai ton huion, kai tein gain ithakon. Which is, you know, it was necessary for Odysseus to wander over, you know, land and sea, everywhere, before seeing his beloved wife and his son and his country, Ithaca, again. You know, so that's the only bit of Greek I can remember. So, you know, it was just the horror of it, hitting me, this man, and I thought, I'll let Miss Ackerley down, this is terrible, you know. So there we are.
I remember learning a passage from the Aeneid in Latin.
Oh, yes.
We did learn behind.
We did, actually. That's very true. Yes. Mrs. Ross, I had for Latin, I don't know whether you did, and she was a lovely lady, and she had four children of her own. She only died last year, you know, in her late 90s. That's what I learnt from Mary Cooper, who was Barbara's great friend at school. But yes, Yes, she was splendid. But yes, they did. People wanted us to learn things by heart. I was always frightened as a teacher to make people learn things by heart because I was sorry for the ones who couldn't. Mm. But actually, I now tend to think that that was a bit of a mistake, you know, and that what you've learned by heart stays with you, you know, ported to a hearth or into a choir. It comes back, you see. All of these, that's, you know, bits of the Aeneid and bits of Horace and all kinds of things. Oh, it was lovely. I loved Latin. I really, really loved Latin. Greek was very hard. Very hard. Yeah.
What did you do for the rest of your third year then?
I went and worked in a library for some of it and various things. Sure. Yes, various things once the year was done, we were away, you know, and that was it. So once we'd done the exams.
To university, didn't you?
Yes, I went to Bristol. Yeah. Yes. Yes, that's right. Yes.
How did you feel going to Bristol after being in the high school? Did it feel like a different world or were things more familiar to you, do you think?
Well, I don't know, really. I liked the learning aspect of things again, you know, because I really, that's my bent. You know, that's what I'm like. I love learning things and I still do. Yes. And so it pleased me. But nothing was on a different level because the teachers that we had were themselves highly educated and thoughtful people. So I didn't feel I was out of my depth in any way when I went to university. I don't know about you, but I felt we'd been very much on the same kind of lines. It was just exciting because there was some, you know, more going on, as it were, more exciting reading and things to do.
And you stayed in education, didn't you?
Yes, I was a teacher then for 29 years. So that was quite a long time with lots of different kinds of schools, in mainly comprehensive schools that I was in. So that was, yes.
How do you feel about the difference between comprehensive and the grammar schools?
Well, I think basically the comprehensive school is right, and people in the middle of the field who would have been failures in a grammar school flourish in a comprehensive school. They do really well, and that is good. I think that the people at the top get themselves to university, and, you know, that's fine. But they don't have as full a grounding as we had. They definitely don't. That's what I think. So I think I was very lucky. Very lucky. I want to talk a bit about school uniforms now, because thinking about it nowadays, I mean, school uniform really is anathema to me now. I think it's appalling to clothe children in compulsory uniforms. I really do not like it. I think we ought to be like the French and the Germans and civilized nations, but you know, we're not. But now I think back, I think that actually our uniform was designed, on the whole, not to be too expensive compared to other schools of that ilk, you know, and not to be ridiculous, you know, however we regard ridiculous. Having a navy blue uniform, for instance, navy blue uniforms are cheaper than dark green or red or any other fancy colour. You really could get them from Marks and Spencers or wherever you like to get them from, Woolworths or whatever. A plain skirt, plain blouses. These were well designed. Plain green tie with a tie-pin if you wanted to buy one from the school with an ivy leaf, and Barbara's still got hers. It's in this house somewhere. And, you know, basically people had thought to make a uniform that wasn't too posh or silly or anything like that. We had to wear hats, but of course, as I pointed out about the school plays, women did wear hats in those days. That's what you did if you were respectable or being respectable. And so we had black velour hats with a white ribbon in the winter and Panama hats in the summer, and they were a nightmare because, of course, if you got rain on them, they would flop. And so there was a beret for wet weather in the summer. But the other thing that I remembered that my mother had completely forgotten, I realised when I talked about it one time, was that in the summer I wore white gloves to school. I had several pairs of white gloves. And I was not the only one. I don't suppose it was compulsory. I don't know. But I've got a picture of other people's hands with white gloves on them. Absolutely amazing these days. You know, you wouldn't dream of it, would you? So that's really very interesting, I think. As I say, in the third year, sixth, they didn't require a uniform anymore. The summer dresses were all right in the first to fifth forms, but I remember them being a nightmare in the sixth form because you were supposed to buy lengths of the poplin in three colours. It was sort of deep pink and a green and a blue, I think it was. And then somebody had to make it for you. And my mother made two dresses for me. I absolutely hated them. And the awful thing about them was that whenever you sat down or anything, they creased most terribly. They were awful things. There really was no sort of easy care option. It was frightful. Other people's always seemed less creased to me than my own, but I don't know whether that was true or not. So there you are. That was the school uniform.
I remember having the height of your hem measured.
I never remember it, but I expect it was. I mean, if you remember it, it will have been, but I don't remember it. I don't even remember what length they were supposed to be. I think that's over knee length?
Over the knee, I think.
Yes, over the knee, yes, that's right. Yes, you see, when my mother went to school, she went to Queen Mary's High School, Walsall, she had to have her uniform over the knee. They used to have to kneel down and make sure it wasn't over the knee, it was above the knee, you see. So, yes, it's very, very interesting, really. But there you are, ridiculous, in some ways ridiculous rules. But
did you wear short socks when you were...
Yes, I forget when you were allowed to wear the tights. I think it was once you were in the... Was it in the sixth form or was it before that? But certainly I remember there was a recommended kind of tight by Miss Cameron. So it must have been... And my mother, of course, who was very, very obedient, went and bought those, and that's what I wore, because they were supposed to be harder wearing. But they cost 10 and sixpence each. That is 55 pence. Well, you can get a pair of tights for that now. So it just shows you how expensive nylon tights were. So perhaps it wasn't so very silly to be wearing ankle socks. You know, when you think about it, you know, these sort of things that are issues, because a child goes through a pair of tights almost a week. So there you are. And sensible shoes, birthday sandals, I remember. You had to have outdoor shoes and indoor shoes. So you left your... You came in, you went down to the cloakroom, which was down in the belly of the school, and you changed. And there was a locker under... Not a locker, a sort of wire cage underneath your peg. And you put your outdoor shoes into that and took your indoor shoes up. Nobody seemed to steal anybody's shoes. It didn't seem to happen. You see, that was... It was just accepted.
And gym shoes.
Gym shoes. That's right, you see. And hockey boots. Mm-hmm. All these kind of things I didn't need, of course, once I wasn't doing these things anymore. But, you know, they all existed. Yes. Yes.
You had a shoe bag.
That's right, and my mother made our shoe bags, and they were bright red. And for the homestead, they were... I think everybody had red shoe bags, actually. Yes, that's it, they did. The great rows, I can see an empty cloakroom with rows of red shoe bags. And you had to embroider your name in chain stitch on the outside. So Catherine Sheldon, mine said, in chain stitch. Very beautiful, really. Beautifully done. Yes, so, yes.
Overalls.
Science overalls, of course, green or blue. Those were... Yes, yes. So, and art, I suppose we wore those for art as well when you did art, because you'd need an overall for that, wouldn't you, really? So, yes. So very, very interesting, really. Yes, yes.
It was quite a wardrobe you had to buy, really, wasn't it?
It was, but really, when my own children went to the comprehensive down the road here, they needed a vast amount more games kit than we ever did. Yes, you see, you don't realise. You know, it was absolutely amazing. They had to have reversible jumpers so that they could be on different teams by the black or the blue side. And all these were specially made. And this is an ordinary comprehensive school, and you've got to buy all this stuff from a particular supplier, Monopoly. You know, it's what made me think that ours was, you know, for the day, amazingly economical, really. I remember my mother went to tailoring classes and made us both a blazer. That was really rather splendid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember the Cash's Name tapes?
The Cash's Name tapes. You can still buy those today. You still can, yes. Yes, they're still around. Mm. Yes.
So what about the dreaded school dinners?
School dinners were absolutely awful, I thought. There were big tables all down the hall, and you went along to the hatches, one or other of the serveries, and you were allowed, Miss Adams said, one fad. But unfortunately, my one fad got taken up every day by potato, because I couldn't stand the reconstituted potatoes. I don't like potatoes now even, but, you know, I mean, this reconstituted muck, it was so awful. So I could always ask, I was allowed to ask for a dinner without potato. So that was fine. But the only trouble was that second only in horror to potato was custard. And that was lumpy and ghastly and vile. So I used to sort of look the cook in the eye and smile very politely and say, could I have the most tiniest bit of custard, please? And sometimes they would be kind, you know, and only give you a tiny bit. But really, some of the stuff really was not very nice at all. And the trouble was, they could make you sit there till you'd finished it. That was the trouble, that it was those days when, you know, it was partly waste, not wanting to waste things after the war, and partly just a kind of, I don't know, that was what it was felt children should do. So there we were, really. But I remember one day when some people put potassium permanganate in the...
I think that might have been Claire Taylor.
Well, I thought it was Judy Fisher, actually, but, you know, yes, I think so. We had plastic beakers for the water, which we had. Anyway, there was a lot of trouble over this, and they said it was poisonous. Well, it is poisonous, but only a bit, you know. It's not very poisonous, potassium permanganate, not in the kind of dilution that, you know. But anyway, that the potassium permanganate crystals into the water. Yes. Yes, but there you are, and then you had these pig bins that you any waste you scraped into at the end, and then put your plates away.
Did we chat over lunch?
Yes, we did.
We didn't have silence.
No, it wasn't silence. No, we definitely chatted over lunch, and sometimes you'd get chatting to people you wouldn't really see otherwise.
Yes,
so that was quite nice,
true.
You know. And then, of course, at break time we had the free milk in 1/3 of a pint bottles, and that was like with a straw. And I loved milk. I mean, that was something that I really, really enjoyed. Some people hated it, of course. But that meant that there often would be some milk left over at lunchtime, in which case people could come and help themselves, which I often did. I often had a drink of milk at lunchtime because it was so nice. I liked milk. And you had buns. You could buy buns at break, and you could also buy Horlicks, but that cost threepence, which was a lot of money. So, you know, you couldn't really have... And I think that was Tuesdays and Thursdays, the Horlicks as well. That didn't come every day. Little tablets in a nice little roll. Yeah, it was very, very, very good, really. So yes, that was sort of snacks at break time. But I hated school lunch so much that by the time I was in the fourth form, I didn't go anymore. And when I look back, that was terrible, because my mother was really quite short of money, and she would pay termly. She would send a cheque in at the beginning of term, and the whole term's lunches were paid for. Like that, with 5 free lunches in case of absence. And I just didn't go. When I found a place to go to, and I found a wonderful place to go to, because I helped with the middle school library. And the middle school library at this time was at the top of the building. It was in an area which had been the first headmistress, Miss Nelligan's, private flat, because she lived on the premises in, you know, 80 years before. It was quite interesting, because one of the little classrooms there, some of the smaller classes had lessons there. One had been her sitting room and another her bedroom. And, of course, there was a little toilet, which was hers. And then there was this room used as a middle school library. And, of course, I could go up there and be working on cataloguing and one thing and another right through the first half of the lunch hour. And that is indeed what I did. So I managed without lunch. It was just so horrible.
You didn't take any food
in? Nope, I never took any food in at all. No, well, I'd had my lunch paid for, hadn't I? My mother had paid. So, yes. So,
deceiving everybody.
Oh, wasn't that terrible? Well, that was dreadful, really. But I did have... I had a great emotional link, really, with that middle school library. And when Miss Adams managed to do a negotiation with the... young people's, yes, it was the YMCA next door, and got the new gym. We could use it during the daytime. They used it in the evenings, and that had showers and everything. So the old gym was turned into a public a library. And the junior library was in a room off it. And we were all invited, parents were invited to buy books for the new library. And I insisted that even though I was over the age for the middle school library then, that I wanted him to buy books for the middle school library because that was what I felt involved with at the time.
Do you remember being in the hut?
Yes, that was in the lower sixth. Our form room was the hut. Yes, that was a kind of, I suppose it was left over from wartime, really. It was a temporary building, which, you know, it was like most temporary buildings, last 40 years or something, you know. Yes, it was fairly warm. It was all right, you know, for warmth, wasn't it? They had radiators all down the sides. Yes, and sometimes in sixth form house as well, which was that end of the that was to the right of the main building of the school. We had some English lessons in there, I remember. Yeah. So, yes, a lot of kind of outbuildings. But actually, the main buildings were rambled around. I remember for one guild day, we did a ghost walk for people to... They paid, you know, whatever they paid and went in. And I was a skeleton. I spent a long time getting myself a black costume with luminous... Because there was some luminous paint and luminous cardboard bones all over me, which was not easy to move around at all. But there I was, a luminous skeleton in the black. And we were in St. Leonard's cloakroom, which went all the way round, you know, so that the people could come in and go along to all these various haunted experiences, you know, and then come out at the other end. Yeah, so that was really good fun. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember the school magazine? Did you have
it? Yes. Well, that was... You didn't have to buy it. It was quite interesting. But it used to cost 3 shillings. And, yes, I did quite a lot with that, one way or another, over the years. Mainly with the creative writing bit of it. But of course it was a very good summary of all the things that had happened in the school over the past year. You know, it was a good magazine, really. It was very good. Those things are interesting in future years. We got some from Chris's Auntie Joan recently, which were really of an era from Cambridge High School for Girls. Of an era well above ours, and there was some fascinating stuff in it. You know, you really, they're historical documents, and they're very interesting in the end. Yes. When I was in the fourth form, I must have put my name down to go on the French exchange, and we were allocated, that they had a link with the Lycée Fenelon in Paris, which is a famous school. We were very lucky, really, and they allocated a young lady to me called Jacqueline Tuil, and we discovered that she and my father worked for the same firm, which was Powers Samus, ICLICT, it's still around, you know, the computers and stuff. Hollerith's, yes. But anyway, so that was a coincidence. And really, when I got there, it was almost, you know, there were so many similarities between her upbringing and mine that was absolutely fascinating. But of course, getting there, we were escorted to London. We got on the boat train. We had to get ourselves as a party from the boat train to the boat, and then from the boat to, I think this is New Haven Dieppe? I can't remember. Anyway, we had to get ourselves then onto the train to Paris, and we would be met again in Paris. So that was a party of girls from fourth to sixth forms who went on that. But in the second year, because Jacqueline and I got on very well, and indeed we still exchange a letter every Christmas, so that was an international friendship that I made through the school. In the fifth year, there weren't any sixth formers going, as it happened. There were only fourth and fifth form, and they put me in charge of the trip as a fifth former, yes. And I thought to myself, it would probably be illegal now, but it showed how much they assumed that we could do it. And of course we could. I'd done it once before. I was very cross with some of the silly fourth years that were chasing off to the wrong train and, you know, had to chase after them with our suitcases to get them onto the right train to Paris, you know, this kind of thing. But, you know, that was it. It was expected that you would be able to do this, and you just did it. And that was all there was to it, really. And I can remember later on when I was a prefect, we were expected to take classes. Sometimes teachers took classes of absent staff, but occasionally if it was a small class and felt to be, then a prefect would be put to sit. Now, that would definitely be illegal today, but I can remember taking an English class once, and they were all writing poetry, and they were all coming up to me to ask me what I thought of their poems, you know, and there I was, and this child had put, so I wandered off in a nonchalant way, and I said, you know, that isn't a word, it's really nonchalant. I said, it'll go all right. You know. She said, no, it won't, you've ruined my poem now. She said, it won't at all. She said, it isn't right. She said, what can I put then? I said, well, perhaps you could put carefree. Oh, yes, that's all right, she said. So I wandered off in a carefree way, and it appeared in the school magazine that summer. So I thought, I put a word into this. You know, but it really was quite strange.
But to go back to the French.
Oh, sorry, yes.
You know, it's just that it strikes me as extraordinary that we were away for a month.
A whole month?
A whole month,
yes.
Having possibly never even left our...
Absolutely
before.
True. I had never thought of that, really. But yes, it was. It was completely. It was 4 weeks.
Family,
yes. Yes. Family. Yes. Nobody turned a hair. It was expected that that's what we'd do, and so we did it. And you, 1 week of that month, you were in the school, and actually attended lessons in the Lycée Fenelon, which was very interesting. So you've got the St. Joan lesson, I remember, and it went. Oh, there was lots of interesting things. And in the art lesson, they were painting. A ring of carrot. They've printed carrots. Yes, yes, that was what they had. Every person was issued with one slice, and that's what they painted. So, yes, lots of interesting things about the Lycée Fenelon. And, of course, we always had got the address of the head of English of the Lycée Fenelon, so we could either phone her if anything went wrong. But otherwise, yes, we had 3 whole weeks of holiday.
We weren't.
Nobody ever came to inspect. No, not at all. No, not in the least. So
it sounds as if you were lucky and you...
I had a wonderful experience. Yes, yeah, some people perhaps didn't so much. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to me, it was a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. And,
so
of course...
You were properly looked after as one of the family.
Absolutely. Well, I was. I was, yeah. One of the family, and Jacqueline and I got on. And we had a wonderful time. So there you are, and we were taken in. We went by ourselves into Paris every day, Jacqueline and I, in the holidays. Again, the expectations of young French girls were much the same as the expectations of young English girls. When Jacqueline was over for a month in England in the summer, she and I went off into London each day. Nobody turned a hair. Nobody thought it was improper for two girls to be out themselves by themselves in London at the age of 14, 15. You know, it was just, that was what it was.
Yeah.
So
I was left to roam in Paris on my own.
No, really? That was awful.
Yes. Yeah. Well, my exchange friend was in school.
You didn't go into school?
No.
Why ever not?
She didn't want me to. So
good gracious.
I remember wandering around Montmartre, all places, on my own. And
wow.
Having men come up to me.
Golly, that was extraordinary. She didn't want you in school, but...
Both the parents worked, you see.
Yes, I see. Oh, you see, Madame Tuile didn't work. Yes, yes. Golly, how awful. Yes. Oh, wow. Yes. Well, yes, I know I was very fortunate, you know, but I'm still astonished. Of course, the holidays were longer at that school, at Croydon High School. We had 4 weeks at Christmas, 4 weeks at Easter, 8 weeks in the summer, and we used to go away the last week in August and the first in September. Well, you couldn't do that with schools today. But we didn't have much in the way of half term, and sometimes only a day if there wasn't a scholarship holiday, which was one day if there'd been state scholarships and you know, Oxbridge entrances and things. So, but often only 2 days half term anyway. But certainly it meant that you got good long holidays, which you could...
Did you have a holiday job?
No, not until the third year sixth when I worked in the public library. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. No. Yes, other people did, and some people had Saturday jobs as well.
Yes.
But yes. And you got 15 shillings, I remember people did.
Yes.
That's what they got for their Saturday, 15 shillings.
Yes.
Mm. I was just thinking about odd things you could do in the school. And in the third year, one of the things we were offered was a little plot of garden to ourselves. And Miss Harrington, who was the head of science, ran it. She was the extremely elderly lady. And Leslie and I, my friend Leslie, felt that we would like a garden, and she gave us this plot, and we used to go along there in breaks and lunchtimes and various things and tend it, and we grew radishes, and they were the most glorious radishes. It was recommended that this was something we could grow, you know, and they really were absolutely lovely, huge and very, very tasty. So that was good fun. But you see, that was all round the hockey pitch at the back of the school, behind the homestead and the elms, there were these little plots of garden. Again, I think that was very forward-looking, you know. There were lots of interesting things about the school. One of the things that they had in the elms was a sand pit, and for the children. And just beyond this sand pit, there was this huge walnut tree. And I remember once Leslie and I were sent on some kind of an errand to the homestead, and this was before break time, and that must have been just the time when the walnuts were falling down. And we got to this walnut tree, and there were nuts all over the ground, and we picked up handfuls of them. I remember feeling how much we'd won with that, you know, what a success that was. So that was really fun.
Yes. There was also a school pond.
There was, and you know, I've really forgotten. I don't think I ever had much to do with it. Again, the biologists would be very involved with that, and I didn't do biology after the third form.
Yes, but when we played hockey, we were always trying to hit the ball into the school pond.
Oh, wonderful!
If anybody succeeded, we'd all cheer.
Oh, that's lovely! What a lovely idea! Oh, yes, because that was where the hockey pitch was. It's a good large area there.
It was a big field.
Yes, all that had to be given up for the office blocks to be built.
Yes, sad to see the old buildings go, but when you think about it, it was a huge plot, wasn't it?
Oh,
it was
Sydenham
Road running.
Absolutely, that's right, between, yes, it was. Oh, yes, if you wanted to develop a city centre, that's what you would pick, wouldn't you? You know, they made them an offer they couldn't refuse, I think. So out to Selsdon, which would, of course, have been nearer for me.
Yes, it would.
Not for the majority of Croydon children.
A lot of people travelled quite a long way, didn't they, to that school?
Oh, they did. The people came from Kent. They did. They did, yes, indeed. And, well, of course, the boundary of Kent isn't that much further. I mean, we were in Surrey, but Saunderstead was in Surrey, but Kent isn't very much further along that road, you know. I think Morlingham's still Surrey, isn't it? So, but I don't know. I'm a bit vague. But my father used to take us out to Kent sometimes on Saturdays or something. So, you know, that, But there you are, I suppose, if a school gets a name for itself, you know, that's...
Did you feel there was any distinction made either by the staff or the girls themselves between scholarship girls who hadn't been paid for, had their education paid for?
I can't say I ever noticed anything. Of course, I was a mixture of the two, of course, because I was a scholarship girl. I don't think so. I rather think, I mean, I obviously everybody's individual experience, they'll have to speak for themselves on that. But my own feeling was that intelligence and interest was respected wherever it came from, and that the elite were the ones who were interested, and that rather meant that some of the fee payers, who perhaps had got in at the age of five and weren't very intellectually interested, though they came from moneyed families very often, I think they were the ones that were a bit left out, because they weren't part of the success story, as it were. You know, I think it's almost impossible to select people at the age of five. It's almost impossible to select people at the age of 11, but it's a lot easier than when they're five. Seven and nine, you know, as you go, a bit in between. You know, they had interviews. I remember Rosalind Mitchell was asked, what's the difference between frost and snow, when she was four? And she said, snow is white, but frost is crispy white. And that's quite a, you know, quite good for a four-year-old, isn't it, really? I don't know why I remember a little funny little detail like that.
Do you remember an interview to go to the upper school?
No, I upper school or the junior school. I don't think we had any interviews to get into the upper school from the juniors. No, I don't think so. It was, I think, I remember one child was told by Miss Mouncey that her parents were told that perhaps it would be a good idea if they took her away and sent to a boarding school. But then she was a bully, you see. She used to produce these great bruises and wheals on my arms where she pinched, yes. So
That sounds like it was an exception, though.
Oh, very much so.
Bullying, was there at school?
I don't think there was a lot, really. I remember somebody, some kind person, coming to tell me once that they had seen on a wall of the changing rooms at Croydon Baths, I hate Catherine Sheldon. But I didn't make much of it, really. I was kind of the girl to tell me, I'm sure. But as I never went to Croydon Baths in those days. So, yeah, we did go to the baths, though, in the first year. We had a double period, and we were marched in crocodile down to Croydon Baths. And the good swimmers were in the deep end, and the moderate swimmers were in the middle, and people like me, who couldn't swim at all, were in the shallow end. And as there were only two teachers, they dealt with the deep end and the middle end, and the shallow end just splashed around. But I did teach myself to swim that year. I did, and that has to have been a good step for the rest of my life. So it just shows, just having time in the baths like that. I used to love it.
Yes,
loved going to the baths.
Doing swimming, but not later on.
No, well, there we were. We went in our hats. We wore our hats.
And sometimes we'd have talks from people outside, didn't we?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, we did. A lot of people would come and talk to us. Yes. Oh, yes. And Miss Adams used to, well, she was good at getting quite famous people to come and do concerts like Food Song, and people came and played the piano for us. So she, you know, she had contacts and she would use them, you know. And of course, in the year under us, there was Jacqueline Dupré. And she was, I remember Miss Adams announcing in assembly that Jacqueline had won a wonderful award or something and would not be staying at our school very much longer. But while she was, her timetable was going to be modified so that she could learn some German, even though she was only in the third year. So the German classes had Jacqueline Dupré in them, I remember, for the short time that she remained at the school before she went on to her specialist musical education. But I remember her well, you know, it was just seeing her in the corridors and things. Of course, what happened to her was truly terrible.